Hi, I'm John Hartness, and most weeks on this show, I play the role of Fandingo the Fantastical, spectacular-looking bard and useless combatant. But for tonight, I'm just me. I'm the author of the Quincy Harker Demon Hunter series, the Black Knight Chronicles urban fantasy series, the Bubba the Monster Hunter comedic fantasy series, and a few other things floating around here and there.
Hi, I'm Joseph Brassi. I play Bjork Bjornsson, the enthusiastic and violent barbarian. Other times I'm known as Killfuck Soul Shitter, eater of bathrooms. I was one of the authors in the Mongoliad project, and I just wrote a debut novel called Skyfarer, which has explosions and sword fights and badass shit. Go buy it. Yeah, bricks.
All right. It's a special treat, readers, or listeners, I guess, because I, Rick Walteri, will not be playing Silas Kane or the Arrow of the Gods tonight. Instead, I'll just be playing me. You know, that guy who wrote the Tome of Bill and a bunch of other shit, including a whole ton of stories that I really should be editing right now.
Hello, my name is Robert Bevan. I play the role of Robert Bevan, Notorious Rogue. In real life, I write the Caverns and Creatures series of comedy fantasy novels and short stories, starting with the first book, Critical Failures.
Hey there, my name's Steve Weverell, normally playing Brandon Fymaster, but tonight playing the much less popular Steve Weverell, and I am the author of the Doomsayer Journeys.
Well, we have a special interlude episode tonight because Drew sends a special message basically saying, fuck all you listeners. Just kidding, Drew's at a con, so that means hotel Wi-Fi, which pretty much means...
No.
No, Drew. So instead, we're just going to do an interlude episode tonight. We tried to get our shit together and talk about maybe playing a game or doing something, but there's only so much you can do with herding cats.
It pretty much ended right about the idea of getting our shit together. And okay, then we're done.
I've been doing edits all day, so my brain is like a special sort of mush.
Well, fortunately, our listeners are like, you know... They're dedicated to asking us, like, you know, good or shitty questions. Regardless, we have a ton of them on the board tonight. So, you know, as an interlude episode, we'd figure we'd work through hopefully each and every one of them and give you answers to questions that you probably didn't really need to know answers to.
But for some reason, you asked anyway.
Hmm. Oh, God.
Really sold that, Eric. It's just going out on Thanksgiving, isn't it?
Huh. I guess I go out the day before, yeah.
The day before, yeah.
Oh, huh.
Well, so, something to be thankful for.
Yeah.
Happy Thanksgiving, weirdos.
Well, what's everybody? Well, before we get to that, I mean, what are you guys doing for Thanksgiving? Minus you, Steve. I guess it's just Wednesday for you.
Yeah, shaking my fist in America's direction, saying, next time, America.
Yeah, I think it's still going to be Thursday, though.
Yeah. Well.
Just saying. My two brothers and sister and I and our assorted family and their children and their children's children get together with my dad and we eat lunch. And then... they go off to other family Thanksgivings, and my wife and sister and I hang out with my dad for a while. We're going to try to get together with my wife's family earlier in the week or later in the week or sometime. But it's a big traditional redneck Thanksgiving.
It'll be our first Thanksgiving in Atlanta. My parents and niece and nephew are driving up here, which is kind of nice. I get to, there's the big family Thanksgiving, but yeah, having it here at my house means I don't have to drive and I can drink a lot more.
So. And the more family you have involved, the more drinking needs to be involved.
Mm.
That does tend to be, yeah.
It's a direct correlation.
Yeah, so, I mean, typically it's so much family, so little drinking. Oh.
It's I'm going to be down at my I think my parents are hosting this year, so it's going to be you know, me, the wife, and kids, and my large extended family on the ranch, which will be interesting.
On the ranch? Are you a cowboy soldier, Jeff?
No. My parents own a like a large 11-acre pseudo ranch like property that is underwater.
For cowboys.
It's underwater?
Yeah. The field turns into a lake in the winter.
Oh, cool.
So, and they just bought a canoe.
How deep does this field lake get?
Deep enough to put a canoe on it.
Do you grow rice?
No. Mostly we would, in the summer, we would put horses or beef steers out on there.
It's like the opposite of Field of Dreams. If you drown them, they won't come.
It led to some really cool college experiences, like coming home and one day and the lovely smell in the house, and walk upstairs and dad's cooking a giant heart in cast iron cauldron.
You should put fish in the water and watch them flap around when the water was deep.
Stupid fish! You should learn to breathe air.
Can we go back
maybe
to the giant heart? Are we talking like dragon heart? Or...
No, a beef steer heart.
I thought we were deliberately skipping over that, pretending like we haven't heard.
No.
Yeah.
I'm writing another book with a dragon in it. I want to hear about big hearts.
It was about the size of like something between a... Oh, fuck. Kind of like a dodgeball.
The pumpkin.
Yeah, it's a pumpkin-sized heart. Pumpkin heart.
What would have made that better is if you came home and your dad was doing that and he was wearing like a Mola Ram costume.
Oh, no. I think he was wearing like jogging shorts or something.
Or he was wearing like a vest made out of skin, but maybe I was just listening to an audiobook about Ed Gein and I get the two confused.
Maybe if I ever do one of the tie-in stories at some point, I'll call it Pumpkin Heart.
Yeah. Next Tim Burton movie.
That's just creepy as fuck. I've never really thought about that, but
Thanksgiving.
I mean, steers are big, so yeah, I guess they'd have
big
hearts.
It was very, very sad because we took the horse out of the field before we had it killed. We took the horse out of the field that it had been sharing with the horse, and for the last like 24 hours before it was executed, it sat in the corner of the field where the horse had left and cried.
Like it was probably Disney thinking, why'd you take my horse friend away? You're probably going to eat it.
Well, kind of, but not.
Yeah, so anyway, I understand we have questions.
Thanksgiving is I don't want to know what Rick's doing.
Oh, you know something? Right. I used to do the big family thing, but since we've reached a point in our lives where, like, you know, most of the family hates us and we kind of hate most of the family. Those have gotten smaller. Yeah. So the only thing I'm going to do is I'm going to drive down to the Jersey Shore, her home, and then usually our tradition is my wife will make, like, you know, a whole ton of stuff for lunch, to the point where we'll sit down at dinner and be like, does anybody actually want to eat this turkey? It's no. Unfortunately, since I have to drive her down and back, and since mom really can't be around, alcohol, that kind of limits my my drinking. So.
So you just come home and pound beers until the sun comes up after you drop her off.
Depending on how the day goes, that is a possibility.
This is very dark.
Well, some idiot decided to throw a writer's conference on the Saturday after Thanksgiving. So I'll be setting all that shit up the day after. Because I decided I don't have enough events in my life, so I'm throwing a fucking writer's fair on the Saturday after Thanksgiving.
Well, so far...
Charlotte? Yeah.
Sacrificing hearts on your underwater farm seems like the best bet for Thanksgiving. Joe wins that one.
I'd sure as shit sooner be at your writing conference than at the mall that weekend, so...
Hey, it's Small Business Saturday, bitches. Come on out. Writers are small businesses. Even great big fat writers like me, we're technically small businesses. Because I'm only the size of two normal employees.
Oh, is it, what is it you guys have? Black Friday. Is that after Thanksgiving? Is it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's day after.
Day after.
Not anymore. It's kind of like Thanksgiving afternoon.
Yeah. You know, around here, it's actually gotten, I guess, a little bit better because I think most people have like realized that, fuck it, I can just go onto Amazon and run my shit. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never understood that. It really annoys me. Obviously, we don't have Thanksgiving, but we still have Christmas, and you'll be...
Ungrateful pricks.
Ungrateful pricks, yeah. You've got to be thankful for.
You should be thankful you got all of us out of your fucking country.
Yeah, you're like, if you put a tally on Christmas and then there's an immediate advert for a sale on the next day, I'm like, oh, fuck off. Give me a break. Can't take a day off from the endless pressures of getting stuff.
Well, it's even sadder, the people who like will camp out and stuff, and I remember when the Wii came out, we wanted to get our kids a Wii, and there was just like certain things I was not willing to do, which was like, I'll get up at a certain time, you know, but I'm not waiting overnight to be online at Best Buy, you know, fuck that shit.
I'm not fighting a stranger for your Wii. Well, maybe one stranger. I'm not fighting a whole crowd of strangers.
No. I mean, I got one when it first came out and I paid extra for it, but I wasn't willing to get up early.
Well, especially since you wait a week after Christmas, you can just go and get them, like, you know, all the people who didn't make their money on fucking eBay, you know?
I have a couple of friends who have religiously done Black Friday for several years, and I simultaneously admire their devotion, but I also find the whole affair incredibly creepy.
My wife traditionally does it, like, you know, with a couple of her friends, but like she's even like pulled back, and like this year she has a concert on Friday, so she's kind of bummed because she can't do her thing. And I'm just like, you know, there's I don't know, the whole affair is just, it plays to the very worst of humanity.
It does, almost deliberately so. It's just like, oh, you've taken all that moment to be thankful. Now we're going to give you all the opportunity to be an absolute prick on Absolute Prick Day.
All right.
Like we fucking need permission.
I mean, it's nice to have permission. Just maybe I should just do that. Sort of.
I wasn't gonna be a dick, but you know, you created this whole day for this purpose, so.
Yeah, you've kind of
wasted.
Economically incentivized it. So.
Yeah, it's like I can get this no name TV for like, you know, for $30 less than I can get it any other day of the year. So that means I should be allowed to punch you in the face for it.
I don't need a TV. Don't even want a TV. But it's a prick day, so eat elbow, grandma.
In case anyone was ever wondering, yes, we understand that we are indeed horrible human beings.
We calls it like we sees it. We roll the dice and play the numbers. Ah, now we're just pricks.
Yeah.
And say, hey, so, you know, sometimes when grandma's standing there, you just sometimes roll a crit.
Triple 20 on grandma.
Yeah.
All right. We want to do some questions?
Sure.
Or do we want to just bitch about being horrible people for another 45 minutes or so?
I'm
good either way.
As we answer the questions, that will probably bring out the horrible people in us.
Yeah, we could do both.
Yeah, it sounds like a good bet. All right, who's fielding them?
I got it up. I can feel them.
Okay, cool.
We'll just go down the list. Our friend Ketico, or Ketico, or whatever.
What? Okay.
Asks, do you all believe in magic, demons, paranormal activity? If not, how about aliens?
Ooh, we actually did a whole podcast this on the Mimic Chest.
How the fuck should I know what aliens believe in?
Ha 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 ha
a better answer than that.
Done. Mic dropped.
Moving right along, and if you want to hear our answer to that, pay up for Patreon. All right. So Bethany asks, I love how it sounds like you guys are having a blast playing. I'm playing a game right now where everyone is super serious, while I mostly just cause trouble. Thumbs up to that.
Yeah.
And it tends to piss the DM off. Thumbs up to that. Were you guys ever a part of a campaign like that, and what happened?
I've been in serious campaigns and in goofy campaigns, and I enjoy both fine, so.
I've never been in a serious campaign. Who
has, I mean, it's fun.
For more than 5 minutes would never bring me into something like that.
It is far more common for a serious campaign to turn into, you know, oh yeah, the gorilla man is walking around downtown with a giant bag full of noodles assaulting people.
Yeah, that's pretty common.
I mean, before I got on this podcast, I hadn't roleplayed in 20 years, and back when I did, I smoked a lot of fucking weed, so... Oh, I've never been in a serious campaign.
I've played a few because I've been like challenged a couple times by people who didn't think I could play a straight man character. But
aside, taking games seriously just to spite someone.
Exactly.
Oh, that's perfect.
I did that once in a Magic tournament. I took it seriously just to fuck with somebody. Still lost. Sucked.
Believe it or not, most of the gaming I've done has been, I don't know that I'd say serious, but not just goofing around and being stupid. I mean, we tried to have a legitimate adventure, and that was the fun of it, and that was good. But I've been in some campaigns, like perhaps with what Bethany is talking about, where the players are really into it, like beyond my comfort level, and like they're speaking in their shitty fake British accents, and it's unnatural and uncomfortable.
They're appropriating Steve's culture badly.
Yes.
Yeah, that's Steve, you have a really good fake British accent.
But man, they like get into these like long conversation, like in character conversations about their gods and shit, and like, oh man, let's get on with the game. And so, and then I think, oh, this is what they think the game is. And, oh,
you know, I was in a game once where like the DM was just so proud of all the shit he wrote. You know, as you're going through town, he's given a description of every single building. And at one point I lost it. And he's like, and you passed the blacksmith, and you passed. And I was like, and I close my eyes and I dig my spurs into the horse so I don't see anything.
I ride my horse into a wall.
To end the misery.
I suppose when you think about it, you know, we stick to the rules at least. I think part of the attraction of our game is finding out how much we can, you know, fuck around within the rules. So I guess we sort of take it seriously.
As much as we do anything.
I was involved in one campaign where the GM was really into it, and the players were into it, but the GM started getting really weird. He took us through this dungeon crawl sequence, and every different room that we went through was just a fucking weird pattern of circles and squares on the floor. And it was like, you had to figure out which circles and fucking squares to stand in to get the next door to open or what have you. And sometimes there were monsters and such, but it got to the point where this was repeated so many times that my friend Keith, when we got to the room, like the door opens and Keith suddenly explodes out of his chair and goes, let me guess what's in the room, a fucking combination of squares and circles. the GM like then like reflexively holds up the challenge for that room, which was a fucking 3D puzzle that he wanted us to do, and Keith just goes, fuck you, no.
I came here to get away from this bullshit.
So, yeah, he wanted us to do complex math and logic puzzles.
I thought you were going to say, like, every room was a different kind of disturbing childhood memory he had, and he was just using the whole campaign as an excuse. That would have been awesome.
You open up the door and Uncle Otis is back.
That is a run a campaign.
He's got a...
I think that would have been great.
He's got his batch of Roman candles.
Come sit on my knee.
Fuck!
Come on, Billy, bring the Crisco.
Bucket of Crisco.
No! No! All right. Next question.
All right. Jason asks, the worst day, this probably actually, we might have actually answered this with Bethany's work. Who was the worst player you ever roleplayed with, and how bad was it?
Oh, shit. I could give a funny answer, but I could give a very not funny answer, so I'll let everyone else go first.
Uncle Otis.
You can have mine, because I probably am the worst player I've ever roleplayed with, so.
Oh, you're not. I mean, I don't know about you, but not the worst person I've roleplayed with.
The first, my first group of college that, fuck you.
Rick is the most committed
paladin at the time.
It's the most committed jerk I've ever met. It's like he's either a very good role player or he's just got some real life issues he's grinding out on us.
Why can't it be both?
This is an interlude that's just going to end with me in tears, isn't it?
Only if we do our jobs.
You chose to play Silas. No one made you. That came out of your head, dude.
Next week we're going to get even more questions. Is Bevan just going to kill Rick one day?
Oh, Jesus.
It says...
That would just take away all of Klaus's entertainment.
I don't want you to die. Death makes the hurting stop. That's not okay.
Yeah, and Silas is terrified of Klaus dying again and winding up in his body.
Yeah, that did not work out well for him.
It worked out less well for Klaus's dick, but...
God damn it!
All better now.
You say that, but it's got to be some kind of psychological scarring there, I would have thought.
Even with healing spells, there's probably some physical scarring, too.
That looks awesome. Ribbed for her pleasure.
You say that, but, you know, I'm envisioning a dick with a rack of baby back ribs on it, and that's just...
I figure considering what we did to her, it's more like ripped for her pleasure.
Now I got that fucking baby back ribs song in my head. Still is baby back dick.
God damn it! I have to edit out.
So far, about 33 minutes.
All right, okay. I'll go. One guy. We were having our game night, and a friend of one of the players was visiting, and so he was just kind of there. And we're gonna let him be a guest player for the night. And he's like an NPC turned PC, and then he was just a total dick. He was gonna be like, "I'm gonna show these guys how it's done," and he just started attacking us.
I was gonna murder everyone. Thunderdome.
Yeah, that guy was a dick.
I think the first group I DM'd in college, there was one good player amongst them, and the rest were just so awful that myself and the guy who was a good player, we it's like we both actively just wanted them to die, so they just stopped playing. Like, we actually reached a point where they got arrested, put on trial, sentenced to die. The guy who was the good player basically told that, basically just lied and said, yeah, I'll come and save you. And then he sat there and watched as they were hung.
Oh, jeez.
That's magnificent.
Guy, he's better off going to work.
That's like the 10-minute version of The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
I had a player join a game that I was involved in college, and this guy was the brother of one of the other players. He was his older brother. He was, like, everything about this man oozed disturbing creepazoid. you meet those guys who it's like some people are like they're just socially awkward, you know, or whatever, or they look kind of funny, and there's it's like no, but they're decent, lovely people. This guy was just this thing, just really, really, like, weird. And like there were three girls in our group, and you could tell that this guy just made every single one of them incredibly uncomfortable. He wasn't with us for more than like two sessions, but the main thing I remember about him is that every time something like disturbing or inappropriate happened, he would laugh. And he had this like really bizarre high pitched laugh that he would do while his body vibrated back and forth. It sounded like when he laughed, it sounded like he was kind of like, That's definitely like if he had been my first exposure to the game and I thought that he had been representative of it, I would have run so far the other direction.
That's like a laugh you expect to hear right before they start filleting your skin off.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, basically. And he would laugh at that kind of shit too. It's like, no, that's not funny.
Well, it was a little funny.
Yeah, obviously I'm telling it as a joke now, but that's because he's gone.
Yeah. It was and then, you know, he got a job doing clown gigs at kids' birthday parties.
Oh, God, no.
Come on, John Wayne Gacy jokes never get old.
Neither do his victims.
Oh, God! Come on, everybody, let's do a high-pitched laugh while we vibrate.
That hurt a little. Let's not ever do that again.
Yeah, I'm a worse person for saying that.
All right.
Just occurred to me, somebody is recording this, aren't they?
Yes.
Yes.
Maybe edit out the child murder joke I just made. I don't know.
Ah, fuck no.
All right.
We've written worse.
Let's move on. Shane didn't really ask a question, but he basically said, I think Robert Bevan sounds a lot like the Twitch stream, It Me JP, and he gave a YouTube link. Did anybody bother to look at that?
No.
Okay. All right, then moving right along.
Thanks, man. Maybe.
maybe. Our good friend Emily, E.M. Kaplan, writes,
top 10 spot on the New York Times list.
Yeah. Everyone should buy Skyfarer.
Yeah, I mean, there's enough top 10 spots for all of us on the podcast, so we could all want that.
Yeah.
We wouldn't have to fight about it.
So, yeah, Skyfarer, Lycan Moon, that'll get you there, right, Rick?
Sure, why not?
NPCs, Doomsayer Journeys, Critical Failures.
The Brennan Thymaster.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
No, that's what I really want. I want a fucking Nebula nomination for the Totally Legend of Brandon Thymaster.
Oh, God.
All of y'all join Sipple and make that shit happen.
So in the spirit of the season, a true Christmas miracle that we can all benefit from.
You guys are better businessmen than me. I was just going to say, I kind of want that Jedi Challenge game.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Nintendo something.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the new Magic the Gathering set releases tomorrow, and I really would like a couple of boxes of Iconic Masters, but that shit's expensive, so.
I would really like time to actually play video games.
I want time.
Time, damn you. Give me some of yours.
That ship has sailed for the next 18 years, breeder.
Yeah.
I'd rather give than receive. I'd like to give everyone Critical Failures for only 99 cents.
A price so low, it's practically giving it away.
In return for this free book, you should give me money. The exchange is...
I've given you opportunity.
Oh, God. All right, what's the next one?
All right, pretty easy one here. Joseph asks, will Cuthark ever be brought back in some fashion?
Well, we did kind of keep him in stasis.
Yeah.
Depends on whether Rob was
there. Yeah, I think it pretty much comes down to, I mean, if Croce ever just says, hey, guys, you know, can I come back? I don't think anybody's going to say no.
Yeah, just to clarify that, because when we put the character art up in a banner, somebody was like, oh, poor Rob. It's like, we didn't fall out with Rob or anything. He's still out there. He just didn't fancy doing the podcast at the moment. So obviously we wouldn't do anything with the Cuthark character without Rob. But, you know, if he ever came back for a one-off, that's definitely on the table, because his character is conveniently in stasis.
And I'd love for him to come back for, like, just long enough to just break Bjorg's heart again.
Oh, yeah. You could do, like, the friendship equivalent of just walk up, walk on screen and say, we were never dating, and then walk away.
I never really liked you.
Just like,
perfect.
I could then have Bjorg just sobbing into his drugs for the next...
Yeah. Well, wait till Bjorg gets healthy.
These hallucinogenics, hallucinogenics will be so much better with tears.
He needs to start singing some Taylor Swift songs.
Bjorg's got a blank space. What?
All right. Our buddy Daniel says, we keep hearing in the intro about Klaus Richter, notorious rogue. However, if anything, branded woman puncher seems the most notorious of the gang.
Oh, God. Ouch. Jeez.
So can you please tell us some of Klaus's deeds that earn him said notoriety?
It's been time. Specifically punch women.
We also got a good follow-up from our buddy Lyle, who says, what is Klaus notorious for other than his inhumanly sized bladder?
Well, he has an inhumanly sized wiener as well.
Klaus is a half elf, right? Doesn't he have inhumanly sized everything?
Well, no, but yeah, you know, it's kind of going the other way with the wiener. It's, perhaps some of that will be explored if I ever get around to writing the Klaus Richter story.
The notorious legend of Klaus Richter.
Yes. You're going to have to put notorious somewhere in the title there.
Yeah.
I'd just like to point out that not only is he not really proved himself to be a notorious rogue, he hasn't really proved himself to be a rogue.
He has only ever tried to pickpocket one character.
And has failed every single time.
No, that first one, like my first move of the game in the first episode, I think it was one of you guys.
You stole a pie.
Well, no, but before that, I pickpocketed somebody, and I got like some coins or something. And then, yeah, and then I stole a pie. That's, yeah, boom, rogue.
Oh, God.
Rogue or Northeast school child in a twee comedy.
I know you said naughty, but I heard Northeast. I was like, what the fuck is wrong with Northeast children?
They're all thieves.
Yeah, son, I don't want you hanging out with them Northies. Can't trust them.
I mean, I grew up in the greater Boston area, so this isn't entirely unfamiliar to me. Fucking Kennedy.
All right.
So yeah, it could be that Klaus is just a notoriously ineffective rogue. Never specifies.
Next real session, Klaus pickpockets everyone.
I've had some lousy rolls.
And you've had some good rolls that, like, you know, that I've just somehow critted against.
Yeah.
It almost makes you believe in Torek.
No, Torek would have let me have it.
Yeah. Yeah, we're in tricky theological territory here.
Yeah, if anyone likes Silas less than the rest of us, it's Torek.
I mean, God, how annoying is it when you remove your love from someone and then he takes it back?
That's quite a disturbing way of putting it. Silas is like Torek's, you know, dangerously obsessed ex-boyfriend.
Silas is the guy who keeps using Torek as a job reference, despite the fact that Torek keeps telling him, no, you never worked for me.
It's more like Silas is Torek's swim fan.
We're never dating.
Torek comes down from the heavens. No, really. Not my paladin. Hashtag not my paladin.
Silas says, thank you, Torek. I just figured Silas has a humiliation fetish.
There's something creepy going on there anyway.
Well, you'll be able to find out soon enough, you know, as the Silas Kane scrolls are finished and are awaiting revisions.
Heretic. You can't revise the Silas Kane scrolls.
I've got to get started on to All the Girls I've Loved Before. It's the Fantastical Adventures of Fandango the Fantastical.
I keep trying to come up with a good Bjork story, but all I can think of is a whole bunch of horrible twists on holiday fables.
You should just,
That sounds great.
Yeah.
Bjork and the Seven Dwarfs, but everyone dies.
It could just be an illustrated children's book.
Oh, God.
Children with no soul.
I can talk to John.
Yeah. All the other barbarians used to laugh and call him names, so Bjork killed them.
That would actually, like, I've seen it as this immense Evelyn, like, trying to be bladed as this extremely positive character, like, fight against that urge to have him be that guy who's really nice because he murdered everyone at home.
It's a complex guy.
There's a reason I left the North. There is no North anymore.
I ran out of victims. Had to leave.
What do you mean, family? I thought those were the shadow voices.
My dog told me to kill them all.
A very Bjork Thanksgiving, where he sits and entertains the shadow voices as he stares into the void.
And eventually I ran out of roses to people.
Or even better, he thinks people are flowers. I was gardening! I kept pulling out the roses and they kept screaming.
Or like you're an extreme version of, like, you know, of Lenny from, like, you know, from Of Mice and Men there. You've just loved everything in your life to death.
I thought you were going to say Lenny from Laverne and Shirley.
Not really that different. One's bigger.
All right.
I'm literary.
God, that's great. You know, if I ever play a campaign where I roleplay a barbarian, definitely taking Lenny from the Laverne and Shirley.
Hello. All right. Christopher has a question for us. Have you guys ever had a DM force you into playing a role, and your name for tonight will be Susan? to explain, my current homebrew D&D campaign just started, and my DM told me that if I played evil like I usually did, I'd be killed before I took a step. I'm not really sure that's forcing as much as telling you, okay, we're not playing an evil campaign, asshole.
Whoa. Does he mean, like, you can't play evil, or can't play evil like he does? Like, he plays evil badly.
that is the most lawyer-like answer I've ever heard.
now I'll be playing a different type of evil tonight.
Yeah, tonight we're going for corporate evil. I purchased your homeland, and I'm bulldozing it, putting in a mini mart.
Bevan is our evil genie tonight. He's taking all these questions, going, "Wish granted."
Corporate evil should definitely be on the scale somewhere, on the spectrum of morality that you can
alignment.
Choose. Yeah, yeah, alignment.
There's like lawful evil, neutral evil, chaotic evil, fucking asshole evil.
I guess corporate evil is kind of lawful evil.
How awesome would that be in a campaign, though? It's like, no, I don't burn down the orphanage. I buy it out and evict them.
Well, exactly. It suits real life. In real life, there is, you know, evil, good, chaotic, neutral, and corporate, which exists outside of everything and can pretty much do what it wants if it has enough money.
And gets tax breaks for it.
Are you sure you're not American, Steve?
Just a student of our history.
I think the short answer for Christopher is no.
Yeah, no.
I mean, I don't do the whole role play thing. If you're into that, that's cool. You be you. It's just not my thing. I prefer Crisco and Twister, but I mean.
Okay.
Don't visualize, Joe. Don't visualize.
I'm not. I went to great lengths not to.
Don't think of this hairy, sweaty.
No! That defense only works a few times.
What's your DM's safe word?
Torag.
Okay. I'll go. I'll jump in with no as well.
What it says? Have you ever had a DM forced into playing a role? Yeah, definitely no. I'd be extremely uncomfortable if I had.
I mean, I've played in games where the person said, okay, you know, no evil characters or no characters of this type. I'm not really sure I would call that forcing me into, like, you know, something. You know, it's kind of like, okay, I'll pick somebody else.
Yeah. Or just not play.
I'll tell you what, if your DM says, right, you can't play an evil role, and you get up to leave, and he says, no, you can't leave either, then you're in a bad situation, and you should get some help.
And hopefully you don't have to cut off your foot to get out of the game.
Oh, yeah, holy shit. Just remember, you don't know what his situation is. He might be texting from some cellar somewhere.
Just remember, kiddies, whenever you sit down with a new group, dial 9-1 first.
But dial the whole thing, just don't hit send.
They're all sitting at a table and this doll just wheels in on a tricycle. I'm your DM. It's time to play a game.
Oh, Jesus.
And he has a Twister board with him.
Well, that's so, all right. Well, moving
so
right along.
Mark asks. I love this. Mark says, oh, Joe, the mighty and powerful keeper of the questions, might I have the honor of having this one answered, please? This is not the same Mark that we told to fuck off last time, just to clarify.
This is the Mark we're telling to fuck off this time.
Well, Mark, here's the problem. I'm not the keeper of the questions tonight. Your fate's in the hands
of first mistake, Mark.
That's a fuck off. You didn't talk to, you didn't say John or Rick, the mighty keepers of the question.
Oh, God damn it! Do we just have a problem? People named Mark?
I would, but the question's actually really funny, so fuck it. During a session, how much are each of you drinking? I often hear Drew pop the top on at least two beers. One, usually after a Klaus or Silas turn.
Well, how can you tell audibly who's popping the top on beers? And I drink not enough to misspell during.
I usually make it through one Guinness in a setting, in a session. I don't drink a ton.
Very restrained. I'm a kind of a. I got myself down to a 2 beer minimum, and now I'm back up to a 3 beer minimum, which is quite a comfortable. I need the first beer to kind of shake off the fact that I got up at 12:45 in the morning. I tried substituting with coffee for a while, but then I couldn't actually go back to sleep. So, yeah, 3 beers is good for me.
Wow. I don't actually keep beer in the house most of the time, so I'm usually drinking soda. Sorry, yeah, I'm so boring.
Yeah, same here. I'm not a beer drinker, and, you know.
Rick, we know.
Jesus, is it just me then?
No.
I have to, like, smash cans halfway through the session to clear room on the table.
I like to think you're drinking for all of us.
I guess I am. What the hell are you guys playing for?
I'm a really lonely guy.
Oh, no. Now I have a beer.
Yeah, now I need... But I got moonshine on the shelf. I might move into that now. Shit, Rick.
I have no liquor within reach.
And now I see why Bevan upgraded to the wireless headset, because I really can't. It's on the shelf like 7 feet away, and I have 6 feet of fucking cord.
We had my son's birthday party earlier in the week, so I've got a nice chest full of beer right next to me.
How much did your son drink?
Yeah, your son's going to be pissed, man. Well,
he's turning 8. It wasn't for him. I mean, yeah, a house full of kids, nobody wants to do that sober.
That's fair.
Yeah, that's fine.
I mean,
I'll give you that one.
That's why Rick doesn't keep beer in the house. He has a house full of kids already, so anything that comes in the house, he just immediately mainlines.
Rick's already moved up to the meth.
Yeah, you didn't ask how much we're injecting during each game.
I got a whole bunch of... If we want to talk about Colombian baby powder.
Colombian baby powder.
All right, Mark, this one's for you. Have a listen.
Jesus. What
the fuck was that? Were you shooting a raccoon or something?
We don't know.
He's got half a dozen beer cans on the floor of his garage, and he's just... doing fucking jumping jacks on them.
No, I invented something. I got a can smasher. I screwed a handle onto a big log.
This is like something out of like the Little Rascals or something.
I want a picture. we need a picture of that for the Facebook page.
When I heard the noise, and Bevan's shooting people.
This is for you, Mark.
what you need to do is make a couple of those and put those on your website, you know?
Yeah, I've thought about selling these. But shipping is gonna be a bitch because they're heavy as fuck.
Just write critical failures on it with a marker pen and that's branding.
Like crazy. D20 to the end of it with a one showing.
I'll take a picture now.
I invented something.
I was really proud of this.
CNE Philadelphia. Send back
7 pictures of just baseball bats. Stacy asks, might any of your characters have romantic pasts?
Probably not Klaus.
I mean, we all know the answer.
Fandango, romantic past, romantic present, romantic future. You know, he's a plot.
Yeah, Brandon. I think we could say in his ongoing love affair with himself.
Back to the Crisco.
And you know, Silas is that Toreg stalker.
The Arrow of the Gods, though, that dude's got chicks.
We'll see.
I don't know. I can't. I look into Bjorg's head and think it was special someone in the past. And I get an answer that's like a flower and a rabbit and a couple of weird symbols and screams. It's like you know that meme where you know, with a lady who's looking confusedly around with all of the math symbols in front of her. When you ask Bjorg to think, it's like that, but with flying body parts.
Yeah.
Well, it's safe to say that Bjorg has loved killing some things.
He loves flowers.
Bjorg does love many things. It's just.
Yeah, he's definitely a passionate character.
He has strange ways of showing that affection.
So far, his relationship with Kufaric is like the closest we have to anybody having a relationship with anyone else. So.
That's just caring about his friend.
Exactly. It's the closest we've got.
Who then doesn't return that caring?
Yeah, well, one day Drew's going to throw in an NPC who's just going to ask the game ending question, why are you guys hanging with each other?
Again, Bjorg will just stare off into space and mathematical diagrams of body parts will appear in front of him.
Fandango's response will be, well, these guys make me look even better by comparison.
I think it's going to be a good place scenario where it turns out that this is hell and we're all specifically designed to torture each other.
Does that make Drew Jean-Paul Sartre?
Yeah, kind of.
Wow. Drew just got French.
If they ever recast Drew, that's pretty good.
I don't think Sartre was as tall as Drew, though.
Drew, we're recasting you as a French guy.
Take that, Drew. That's what you get for missing a game.
All right, guys. Picture sent to our
Jesus. Jesus fucking Christ.
That is like what I expected it to look like. Oh, my God. That's brilliant.
You can do five at a time.
That's seven at a time.
Oh my God. This is quite possibly the best thing I have seen in a long time.
I was thinking to myself, surely you didn't invent anything useful, but look it up, fucking wonder. You could put like a whole case worth of cans and stack them up. You could just make eye contact with your neighbor and just smash them down.
Here's to you, Mark.
If you put that up on the, you should put that up on the site. Really.
Oh, yeah, that has to go. That has to go on the page.
Put it up on the site and don't put any explanation. Just put Mark's name.
Yeah, that's spectacular.
That's a work of art.
Yes,
I am in awe. Yeah,
outsider art.
All right. So
I just love that one day you just looked at this giant log and said. This needs a handle screwed into it.
Yeah. No, I didn't have the log yet.
He went out and acquired the log for the purpose.
I had a vision.
There should be a whole, like, recorded audio blog post about the search for the proper log for this. Fucking
this,
gulp,
this definitely needs more explanation.
What more explanation could you want? I need to smash cans.
That's more of a haiku. I was hoping for an epic poem.
Yeah, you know something. I think, dear readers, this story will be continued as a Patreon extra.
Build your own log cans.
We'll recreate it in video.
The detailed, yeah, secret instructions on how to build your own log cans.
Secret complicated instructions. Very advanced. Patented. Patent him in the U.S. Patent Office.
So Patrick says that he gets over on here all the time and then draws a blank. and wants to send shout outs. So, and then he says, could I just send a shout out or two? Nah. But then he gives a shout out to his brother, who's the high point of his brother's life was having Bevan tell him, fuck you on this segment. Well, I think now we should all, on the count of three, say, fuck you, Patrick.
So no. We should not forget Patrick. We should all tell Lyle to fuck you again.
Yeah. All right. That in itself is a fuck you to Patrick, yes. So it works both ways.
Yeah, there you go.
On three. One, two, three.
Fuck you, Lyle. Lyle.
Hey, next question's by Lyle.
God damn it.
And I did check, it's the same Lyle.
It is.
Hi, Lyle.
Hey.
We frequently hear about the good times had at the conventions, but what have been some of your worst times at conventions?
Oh, they were the same.
Worst times include falling down.
I was coming out of the convention center parking lot at Emerald City Comic Con, and I saw two methed up people having sex against the wall.
Nice. That was the best time, but what's your worst time?
Actually, it was funny. I was pulling out in my car, and I was stopped at the edge of right at the exit point, and there was like traffic across the street. So I'm sitting there with my windshield filled with these two like methed up people fucking in a corner, and I'm like, well.
This is my life now.
I'm glad my kids aren't in the car.
Fucking glamour of publishing, baby.
Yeah, you just, you know, own that shit. Just kind of narrate it with a David Attenborough voice. Film it on your phone. Make some money.
Hey, see.
You should have snuck up and just slid them a, like a signed copy. You know,
but I would love to just put it on the ground next to them and then see like the next day, you know, oh, guys, we fought so hard. We made a book.
Follow your dreams. Your buddy, Joe.
Have a good time.
Yeah. There was the convention in Arkansas where they were vacuuming cows outside of the vendor hall for the con.
That's been a hell of a vacuum.
They weren't like sucking the whole cow up in there, but they were cleaning the cow with like a fucking shop vac for a 4-H show.
How did the
4-H show drew significantly more people than the book convention.
Hell, I would have abandoned my table to go watch that.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, that one was rough. There's so many bad conventions. There was a convention I did in Dallas where I got food poisoning from the convention center hot dog. Ooh. Yeah, that was a bad night.
That was the cows getting their own back on you.
There's pretty sure there were no cows harmed in the making of that hot dog.
See, yeah. You're really not going to top Joseph's story unless you tell us that, like, the guy, that, like, there were two meth heads fucking a cow, you know, next door.
Yeah. I know he's going to win.
I've lived in places where that would happen.
I've only ever been to one convention, and I thought I had a great time, but now I realize that I missed out on a whole load of stuff.
Still had Naked Ferret Jesus.
Yeah.
You know, Naked Ferret Jesus does rank on negative con experiences.
I think he more ranks on surreal comic experiences.
No, surreal was the Viking redneck who I could not understand.
My brother was at the convention.
Yeah, mine was, I guess, I spilled my cooler full of beer all over the lobby at the Hilton. At Contraflow, and then I spilled my cooler of beer all over the wires at for the sound system at Carn Carolinas. Falling backwards down the escalator.
Okay, I was going to say, you, the falling down the escalator wasn't ranking there.
Only one guy saw that, and he was, you know, the guy that worked there, and thankfully stopped the escalator.
It could have went a lot worse. Yeah. Choke it up is a positive.
All right. Craig, who has the best last name of all of our fans, Craig Von Doom.
Wow.
Nice.
What of the allegations that Broken Bridge Publishing are the creators of the dice Mordred uses?
What?
Huh? Wait,
Craig's what? Going deep on Bevan's books and Drew's books. Since Drew created Broken Bridge Publishing, none of us can neither confirm nor deny. Because Drew ain't here.
Yes.
Moreover, he asks, are there temptations of putting nods to your fellow A&D crew in your works? Nothing serious, but small background points to each other's work and not full-on shared universe stuff.
Thanks, fan. I've done that a couple times.
He does mention Sinus.
Oh, right. All right. Sorry. There was another one, though.
There is a character. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. I was just going to say there is a character named Silas in the Drifting Lands, and he is fucking crazy, but that's where the similarities end.
Sinus. I forgot about that.
I haven't done it yet, but some of these fuckers will probably show up in Above a Story sometime. All right.
Yep. All right.
Cool.
Kristen asks, of your literary characters, which is your favorite to write and why? Kristen gives us way too much fucking credit for our characters, ascribing literary to them. I don't know.
I'm going to say Catherine when she's interacting with Drow.
Yeah, Catherine is cool.
Yeah.
And she really gets awkward, like, thinking they're just black people.
Yeah. That shit's funny. I don't know. I keep killing off my favorite characters. I don't know who my favorites are. It depends. Right now it's Bubba, or actually Skeeter, because I'm writing a Bubba book right now. So probably whoever the secondary character is and whatever I'm writing at the time.
I'm currently listening to the I'm currently listening to the progress of the Brandon Vimaster audiobook. Mm-hmm. And I'd have to say that Brandon has been my favorite character to write because I basically just wrote like a kind of snarky dramatic fantasy story, and then I just get to put this idiot in it now and again. So it's a lot of fun.
I think my favorite is Gan, this creepy 12-year-old stalker who just so happens to be smarter than pretty much everybody else in the, like, you know, in
pretty low bar.
Sure enough.
I mean, I love my protagonists in the Drifting Lands books, but I think probably my favorite character to write in terms of just, you know, the shit that comes out of her mouth is Clutch, the ship's pilot. Every time she's in a scene, and it's like even more so in the sequel book, because she's every time this character opens her mouth, she says some combination of, you know, soul destroying shade getting tossed.
Is there any kind of shade?
Well, yeah, you know, there's infective
straight
shade
for the soul destroying.
There's weak shade. Is the kind of shade that's, you know, cast by a really pathetic lentil plant. Watch, I'm gonna feel like an idiot. Someone's gonna find out that lentil plants have like huge fucking leaves or something.
Lentil plants are the master of shade.
Screened in porch.
Her second part is, of your choices, who would win in a gladiator arena combat against the others?
I don't fucking know.
Shit, Skeeter wouldn't. He's 150 pounds soaking wet.
Brandon would definitely assume he'd win.
Clutch just starts snarking at people, and then once things escalate to a certain point, she just fucking pulls out a fire hatchet and starts hacking.
Gant doesn't fuck around when it's time to start killing
people. Yeah, my money's probably on Gant in that fight.
Catherine would have some distinct advantages during a certain point in the series.
Yeah.
I don't want to give away any spoilers, but yeah.
Yeah, there's a time when Catherine's pretty tough, but I think even then, Gan might have an edge. Our friend Jim Hansen, not to be confused with the dead Jim Henson, because it would be creepy as shit if Jim Henson were commenting on this.
Are you kidding? That would be awesome.
Amazing, really.
Yeah. Still creepy.
Let's just go with pretending that it is.
All right. Can anybody do a good Kermit voice?
Hi-ho!
Right. Does Brandon have Hi-ho. Names?
That's not bad. Go ahead, Rick.
That was good.
Hi-ho, does Brandon have names for each of his abs?
I wish I had a better answer for this now. Since Jim Henson came back from the dead. Hang on a second, let me do it.
You're really blowing this opportunity.
I am. Hang on 1 minute.
Because of you, he's going to crawl back into his grave. Nice.
He's looking up baby names online.
He's like, quickly, I only have till midnight.
He's dragging Fuzzy Bear back to hell with him. God damn it.
Did you guys know apparently there are only two abdominal muscles?
I wouldn't have ever seen any of them, so sure.
Yeah, I've never seen one. I'm still convinced they're just Hollywood trickery. apparently, there aren't like 12 or however many it is that Brandon has. There are just theoretically two of them that are segmented.
I've just got one.
Yeah, I just got one big.
It's round.
I would imagine that Brandon Fymaster calls each and every single one of his muscle, and like even the very obscure ones that aren't visible to the human eye, he just calls them by their scientific Latin name and is immensely proud of doing so. I think he diminished them with a nickname at all.
I think all of his muscles are probably visible to the naked eye.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, let's be fair here. There are probably some muscles that are so well defined that they can only be seen in ultraviolet light.
Well, he's definitely defined them. That's actually in the Brandon Firemaster origin story. He takes a hit in a very obscure muscle region, which you wouldn't see on a normal person, but you can see on Brandon because he spent a long time, you know, working on that obscure muscle region. So that's canonical. He doesn't have cute nicknames for his muscles. He just calls them exactly what they are.
You know, something I've wondered every now and again is like, if you like put a weight on the end of your pinky finger and just like pumped it up and down a bunch, could you really like pump up your pinky finger muscles to ridiculous sizes?
Just have like one massive pinky finger.
Yeah. I think about.
I actually don't think so because I think there aren't any muscles in the hands.
What the fuck moves your hands?
It's all tendons moved by muscles in your forearms, I think.
Seriously?
I think so.
That's wild.
I mean, I'm not an expert, but.
Yeah. Oh. I think
I've been wasting my time.
Concentrated on the wrong muscle.
So I'm going to have the strongest motherfucking pinky, man.
Really?
I just wanted to see somebody with a hulked out pinky finger.
There's a pinky articulation muscle that you can work on.
And a giant knot at one point in the arm, but not the others.
Yeah.
I think it'd be great. That's like a finishing move. You get people, it's like, hey, you know, let's do a pinky swear. Got you now, motherfucker.
Pinky swear of death. We pinky sweared and you ripped my finger off my hand.
All right. Joe asks, here's one for John. You've mentioned a few times that you did theatrical lighting before you started writing full time. What were your favorite shows you worked on, and what company did you sell lights for?
So, favorite shows. Shit. I did a community theater production of Rent when I thought it was going to be the last show I did theater lighting design for, and I was still working for Barbizon, which is the company I sold lights for. So since I thought I was done doing theatrical lighting after this, I called in a bunch of industry favors, and that fucking set was loaded down. I brought in about $120,000 worth of lighting equipment into the theater. It's not a very big theater. It seats like 220 people. But it had the most badass lighting rig for 3 weeks that I'd ever seen. So that one was really cool. I did a production of Corpus Christi where I lit the whole show with Christmas tree lights. And that was a lot of fun. And then I designed the I Am Lovin' You tour for the Avett Brothers the year they were nominated for the Grammy. And that was pretty cool. And Barbizon was the company that I sold lights for most of my time. There were a few others that I worked for off and on, but I spent 17 plus years working for those guys.
That was too straight of an answer. Fuck you, Lyle.
Yeah, right. Fuck you, Lyle. I also installed lights in a lot of strip clubs. So, nice. You know, nothing wrong with that either.
Max asks us, if you could punch one celebrity in the face, who would it be and why?
Woody Allen.
Fuck, just one? Huh. Come back to me.
Yeah.
There's a lot, but Woody Allen, absolutely.
Yeah.
He's a fucking douchebag.
Have you seen that guy? You'd kill him, Joe. he'd just drift off into the wind. Like pollen. He'd just explode into pollen. I mean, I'm not saying that's necessarily a bad thing. I'm just saying you don't have to commit to that to be the guy who exploded Woody Allen.
I take it back. I'm going to go with the obvious Donald Trump and I'd wear my Caverns and Creatures t-shirt because, you know I'll be on camera.
Oh, I think you're a consummate businessman. That's why I admire you. It's like,
yeah, I was thinking Steve Bannon.
Oh yeah, well, Steve Bannon is kind of a wannabe celebrity.
Oh, but imagine you'd have to touch his face then, though.
They make gloves with spikes on them.
His face is like the blob now. It might just kind of wrap around your hand and draw you in.
Well, with his face, Harvey Weinstein doesn't. I'm not sure about face so much as a cock. He's somebody who needs a good cock punch, you know.
You'd have to touch Harvey Weinstein.
Not if you used Bevan's log.
It's not that we want to punch them in the face. Who do we want to use Bevan's hand smasher on?
God, that'd be brilliant. It's like Donald Trump's giving his address and like, I'm gonna put Mexican people in a blender, and then Bevan just sails down from the sky with his log smasher and his Cabin the Creatures t-shirt.
Well, I at that point, I might be wanting to sell the log design.
I think we just gave you a new like YouTube channel here. You know, who will Bevan smash this week?
Log smasher. Well, you guys will pick quite noble.
Smashing heads.
You guys have all picked quite noble pursuits, so I'm just going to have to say J.K. Rowling. That'll teach her for writing a fucking children's classic and giving all her money to charity, thinking she's better than me, even though she objectively is by every measure.
The monster is better than you, bro.
Oh, God.
All right. Well, since we're on Steve here, we have a Steve question.
Everybody gave me time to take that back. I'm not taking it back.
No. I'm looking at the question. The next one's for you anyway, so fuck it. And I didn't want to repeat it.
All right.
I'm an unreasonable man.
All right. Edward asks, what is the process of deciding to put a book on audio, and how do you choose a good reader? Steve, will any of your other books besides Shoot the Dead go into that format?
Brand of Firemaster is currently being recorded, and to choose a reader on, I put it up to popular vote, which was a nice, easy way of doing it for me. As for other books, powerful. Yes.
Wait, are the Doomsayer Journeys still not on Audible?
They will be. Coming in 2018, the Doomsayer Journeys will be on Audible.
Okay.
Says the guy who, by the way, that contract showed up. So, says the new publisher for the Doomsayer Journeys.
Hey, I've been waiting for your permission to break that. I suppose may as well break it now.
Sorry.
By the way.
It's all John's problem now. But yeah, there we go. Falstaff Books handling the audio for the Doomsayer Journeys.
Yeah, so Steve's process for choosing a narrator for the Doomsayer Journeys is he's not involved in it at all. He doesn't have to fuck with it. I, however, have to find somebody who's suitably British.
Suitably British.
I like that attitude. It's like, here, you do it, and you just send me money.
That's what's going on with the Angry Robot with Skyfarer. Skyfarer's audiobook is in production right now, and I have no fucking clue who's narrating it.
Yeah, from a publisher standpoint, it's one thing to narrow it down to three or four people and give the author a chance to talk to them, to maybe listen to some samples, but geez, you don't want to get them too involved. Then it'll just take forever.
Well, go ahead.
I was just saying, I just fell into audio, and it's been the biggest game changer in my career.
Like, I both love and hate audio. Like, I love it because it's been huge for me. But since I'm doing it kind of like, you know, I'm not working through a publisher or so, it's kind of like, you know, okay, I listen to, like, you know, everything. I, like, proof it and stuff. It's just brutal. Like, when you take a book that's, like, 30 hours long, and it's like, okay, now I got other audio files that I have to fucking listen to, a story that I know by heart, that's just brutal.
Oh, I don't listen to that shit. No, I've got another writer who I publish, and she loves audiobooks, so whenever I produce an audiobook, I send it to her to proof.
So I enjoy it. I mean, you know, my guys, they send it to me in batches, like a couple chapters at a time, and then I listen to the chapters, and I'm like, wow, I remember that. I'm so funny.
Yes, I am. I said this in a post earlier. It gives me an excuse to laugh at my own jokes. It's brilliant.
Like when they really nail it, it is awesome. And, like, you know, I know Chris who did the Bill series. He nails it more often. Like, you know, he makes even my unfunny stuff sound funny. It's more the getting through the story of, like, you know, of hey, this is great, and I still have 17.
Yeah, it'd probably be a different story if I was, you know, if they just dumped it on me all at once. But
a couple chapters at a time,
no problem.
Yeah, with my stuff with Bellbridge, they used to send me the whole file to proof. But then after three or four books and no notes from me, they finally caught on that I don't listen to them.
Every time there's a long pause, I get the impression that I should apologize for that J.K. Rowling remark.
Nope.
There's only been one long pause now, or two now.
Okay, so another missed opportunity for Steve to apologize. And Holden asks, you know, what is the perfect woman for each of your characters? I'm assuming that's not J.K. Rowling for Steve.
Well, if we're going to get onto the subject of whether I'm sexually attracted to J.K. Rowling, that's a different, it's a complicated relationship I have with the famous children's author J.K. Rowling. And now the next pause, I'll have even more to apologize for.
Yeah.
Right. She's rich. She can afford security. She's not worried.
What I like the way this is worded is woman for each of your characters. I don't think I'm gonna sit here and go through the next six dozen characters.
For Fandango, live.
I was gonna say for Silas, begins with Tor, ends with Ag. You know,
saving himself with Tor.
I'm sorry, I'm getting the vision of flying limbs in math again.
He's a complicated guy.
He's a complicated guy.
And no one understands him, but his woman's like arm.
Honestly, there's the stereotype of the hot barbarian chick, and maybe so, but I could just as easily see him going for some nice homely girl, or for the personification of the existential nature of violence. That could work too.
Now that's a romantic backstory.
Maybe some twisted part of him wants a woman like a bear. Maybe like Rosie O'Donnell or something. I don't know.
Damn it.
Also could possibly be the existential embodiment of violence. Yeah.
I'm going to marry the woman who killed the bear who killed my mama.
Oh, I got it.
Joe. Finger, huh?
Yeah?
Jorg wants Ronda Rousey.
Oh, shit, yeah, yeah. That would probably do it for him.
Because she would fuck him up.
Yep.
She ate the bear who ate my mom. It's like an Oedipus thing.
It's an edible complex.
Oh. I'm completely falling down on the live blog.
Brandon Finemaster, I suppose, canonically, you know, I was originally going to say he was asexual, and the reason I was going to say that is because I didn't want to, like, give off just a constant creepy, rapey vibe. But, you know, he's clearly kind of aware of what sexual attraction is on an instinctual level, but he has this weird yin yang of extreme prudism and self-aware sexuality. So
can Brandon Thighmaster touch Brandon Thighmaster?
I don't think he could in a sexual way. I think he'd get
all right, that's confused. Never been clear.
So basically, you're saying the perfect mate is called a mirror.
I kind of got the sense that Brandon, like, gets off on the idea of people getting off on the idea of him.
Yeah.
He's like,
now all I see is body parts and math.
I think he's very much sexually attracted to the idea of Brandon Thighmaster without any kind of physical commitment being there. So. That's a complicated one. I'm not sure where you... what letter would represent that on the whole LGBTQ thing.
Yeah, Brandon's probably like, every night I meet me in my dreams.
Oh, Lord.
Wow.
Touch. He has a deep spiritual romantic relationship with the idea of himself.
Well, since we're talking about Brandon and, you know, we're still waiting for that for the uncomfortable pause of apologizing. Jerry asks, who from the party would Brandon prefer applied his various body oils, whether it's a character or an actual person?
Oh, Lord.
Everyone on the podcast just put their finger on their nose as in a not it gesture.
Well, he wouldn't. He wouldn't have anyone touch him at all. But if he was forced to, I guess it'd probably be the Arrow of the Gods because of that weird kind of situation where we all unreasonably like him for no reason other than the fact that we all the fact that we all hated Silas and he just I'm not sure how that worked out. That was a very odd rolling session.
Oh, great. Now, so, now we're going to have like some slash fiction where like, you know, the Arrow of the God shows up in Brandon's tent at night and says, I'm here to give you your Master Oiler badge.
Dude, that
Yeah.
Okay.
That is the most disturbing.
Something for the fanfic, is there?
Very much back in snorting life-size cocaine statues of people territory now.
Canonically, Brandon Firemaster has developed a way of distributing oil around his entire body without anybody else intervening. So you would never have to be in that situation.
At this point, Brandon probably sweats body oil.
Yeah, probably. He's definitely kind of like a creatine body oil hybrid at this point.
We got three more here.
Sounds like a good.
Yep. Scott asks, is there any chance we could get a combined A&D episode and Power Hour in the future?
Jesus Christ, why are you trying to kill us?
The answer is yes. If you can get a convention to fly us all to wherever, we'll do it.
Yep. And make sure there's no orange soda on hand.
Right.
But lots of mics.
Doesn't matter how much equipment we've got. Bevan's only got to drop beer on it anyway.
I think Joe meant Mike's Hard Lemonade.
Yeah, so that's what I meant.
Ah.
I see.
I went the same way as Steve with that one.
Well, you just naturally just assumed you're referring to Bevan's tendency to destroy electrical setups with his cooler. But no, that makes sense as well.
All right.
Okay. Corey asks, which alignment is more fun? Y'all keep going chaotic neutral, but are there any others you enjoy?
I actually really like playing lawful good sometimes.
I'm lawful neutral. Am I the only guy who's lawful anything? Is anybody else?
On paper, in Silas's mind, Silas is lawful good.
At least he's lawful good somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, don't monks have to be? Do they have to?
Yeah, you have to, yeah.
Barbarians have to be chaotic, I think, as well. Or at least some shade of neutral.
I just personally don't like the whole concept of alignment, except for for example paladins, where it's a big part of the whole class. But not except for Silas. I find it restricting. I just use chaotic neutral as a cop out to not have to play an alignment.
Surely a rogue is naturally chaotic neutral anyway.
Yeah, well, I mean, the whole alignment system has evolved with each edition of the game. It might have been second edition or something. They said chaotic neutral was essentially insane.
Yeah.
And then it evolved to where, like, chaotic neutral was, I don't give a shit about alignment. I'm chaotic neutral.
And I think that a lot of times alignment is really useful when you're just starting to role play because it gives you some of those guideposts. But after you've done it for a while, you kind of know when you're building a character and how you're building the character, and you don't necessarily need that chunk of roadmap.
Yeah.
So, you know, for some of us like me and Steve who have role played less, or it's been a long damn time, that kind of stuff's more useful, but a lot of the rest of the party has done this shit a lot more frequently and a lot more recently, so
they don't need a crutch. I disagree with that even. I mean, with the specific examples of you and Steve, because, I mean, you, all right, sure, you haven't role-played, but you've told stories.
Yeah.
You know how characters work.
Well, What I think is, like, basically what you said, Bob, was, like, for paladins, it kind of makes sense, because, I mean, you know, yeah, they're supposed to be in their god's good graces and stuff. Other characters, it doesn't. Like, you know, there used to be a thing where, like, rangers had to be, like, lawful something. And I'm like, okay, why do I need to be lawful good to basically string a bow? why is that a job requirement?
I guess lawful makes sense for monks because I guess they have to exist by a code of discipline.
Yeah, typically. And like I said, if you can justify it with something like that, okay.
Yeah.
If a restriction to your behavior is part of your class.
Yeah, I agree. Class, it's a useful framing device.
And in that sense, chaotic for a barbarian also makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's that case in this edition. I just.
Yeah. Because fuck rules, fuck pants, barbarian.
Oh, Bevan on a Saturday night.
Yeah, but it used to be like cavaliers were like supposed to be chaotic good, and I'm like, okay, why?
The Three Musketeers, that's... chaotic good?
Yeah.
Wow.
No, they're chaotic as fuck, but...
They served a queen. Oh, we're going to derail here to...
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Let's not do that. Let's leave the Three Musketeers.
We have enough things to apologize for already. Yeah. We'll leave D'Artagnan for the next time.
Thanks, Corey. You're making us get deep here. All right. Our final question of the evening. Jesse asks, who would dream group from DM to players, anyone from history or present, who would it be and why?
Are we to talk about which real life historical figures we would put into a Dungeons and Dragons party?
It's like, let's see here. It's like Genghis Khan, Charles Manson,
Abraham Lincoln.
Super group.
I would love to see Ayn Rand and Karl Marx attempt to coexist in the same D&D party.
I kind of want Stephen Hawking because that's what fucking Skype sounds like most of the time anyway.
Stephen Hawking at the D&D party. Yeah, why not? Yeah.
Oh, man.
He would be the most amazing DM, too. You cast Fireball. It fills the room with superheated gases.
You're fucked.
The orcs are torched immediately, like the heart of a blazing star.
Ah, celebrity DMs. Stephen Hawking's definitely up there. David Attenborough would be another good one.
Oh, man, I'm going to write a story about a D&D campaign with all the characters being U.S. presidents.
God, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
That would be good.
Oh, it's forming in my mind.
It'll be chaotic, neutral traces. Every one of them. Oh, another good DM. Christopher Walken. Just purely for his voice.
That party would need more cowbell.
Definitely.
I got a fever.
No, I don't need a cleric.
You gotta understand. Torek is a very picky deity. Because, you know, all the time he's fucking hammered.
I've got a lot of requests to make of Drew when he gets back.
All right. As we once again go to silence, hoping that Steve like drops to his knees. It's like, JK, please forgive me.
This is hardly punching down. She's the most powerful fucking woman in England. she's probably got magic powers. Probably doesn't even, I suspect that level of international fame and wealth and generally being a good person, you may as well have magic powers. I'm essentially at this point just a goblin throwing stones at some kind of
You're saying good person. I was thinking she's probably like powerful enough where like, you know, she's like you realize I could have you killed on what I find in my like, you know, in my seat cushions.
She probably has a little diary somewhere that she just puts people's names into, and then they die 3 months later. Not for any sort of magic, but just because, you know, you get to that level of power. That's, you just, I would hope that I had had that level of power.
She has a box and a button. If I push it, I sell 100,000 books and somebody I pick dies.
But, you know, when you get to that level of power, it's like it's like God is the personal moderator of your forum, and you get to make periodic ban requests.
At this point, J.K. Rowling is probably the GM for the entirety of the UK. I can only assume that the only reason I continue to exist is because I am allowed to continue to exist. So,
one day you're going to wake up and she's going to be standing over going, "You have ceased to amuse me."
Yeah, it's just like, enough is enough. And she'll just snap her fingers and I will be snuffed out like a cigarette in the rain.
She'll nod and like Queen Elizabeth will bury a hatchet in your head.
This is incredibly poetic for discussing J.K. Rowling committing mass murder.
Well, that's fitting.
Wait, hold on. Did you see something in the news? What are you talking about?
Oh, no.
Bevan. Poor, naive Bevan. Nothing she does gets reported in the news. I think that was quite an elaborate scenario, too, for me to avoid apologizing to J.K. Rowling now for my unreasonable hatred of her.
Yeah, we all like to think the uber rich, like, you know, they just have secret, like, you know, secret dungeons where they just kill random poor people and nobody cares.
Well, you say we all like to think that, Rich, but I think it's probably just me and you.
Yeah, I've literally never had that idea. Ever.
Was that the last question?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
It might very well be.
Yeah, as we all disappear into some rich fucker's dungeon.
Oh, it's that's an Asimov story, isn't it? The last question.
It is, yeah.
It's a really, really good one.
It's a very good amp. No spoilers here.
No spoilers. It's just
the last question is basically ends up they're searching for the meaning of existence, and then J.K. Rowling comes down and kills them all.
Right now she's phoning up Warren Buffett and like Bill Gates and being like, some of these fuckers are stateside, pick which one you want.
All right, so that is the last of the questions.
Yeah,
yes it is.
I would say any listeners who enjoy us talking total bullshit and J.K. Rowling conspiracy theories, if you sign up to the Patreon, we do something like this once a month, at least. So there you go.
Except much, much worse, usually.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, this is the toned-down version. I'm normally about 8 beers in at this point and really getting down to the nitty-gritty of... I've got like a clipboard with pictures of J.K. Rowling and little bits of red thread going everywhere. And like I say, have to be on the Patreon for that, where she can't find us.
Yeah, I guess that's it then. Are we done?
Yeah, I guess that's
okay.
It.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks for listening.
Suckers. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Bye.
Be thankful. Bye. This one's over.
Cheers, guys.
Bye.
Cheers. Take care.
Bye.